Welcome to episode 26 of Does Not Compute. Today, we're sponsored by the good folks at Linode. Linode makes it really easy to spin up your own virtual private servers for whatever you need, whether that's just your personal site or a massive application backend. They've got awesome, truly server-grade hardware, SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and hosts with Intel Xeon E5 processors. Linode's plans start at just $10 a month, and all the billing is hourly, so you only pay for what you actually use. Linode also provides some great additional services like backups, node balancers to help you scale, and Longview, which provides detailed system metrics for your machines. So, where can you go to learn more? Well, just head over to linode.com/doesnotcompute, and they've got all the details. Even better, when you sign up with the promo code DOESNOTCOMPUTE20, they'll give you $20 of credit, which is enough for up to 2 months of your own powerful private virtual machine.
So, Paul, I have a new fad that I want to talk about this week. And that fad is headless CMSs or detached CMSs.
What is a headless CMS, Sean?
Well, you know that old story where the guy was riding the horse, didn't have a head.
I think it's the headless horse fit. Yeah, that's the story.
Well, it's not like that at all. Headless CMS is a CMS. So you could take like a CMS like WordPress, and with WordPress, you have theme functionality, where you use basically PHP to render out your templates, right? Well, headless CMS would be like CMS with a WordPress style admin, but it exposes a JSON API instead.
So the idea is that instead of being constrained to here's what you have available to make your front end, you just get JSON back by making calls, and then you can do whatever you want with that JSON.
Right. I think the idea is that, like you said, people see traditional CMSs as being, you're kind of constrained to whatever templating language that CMS uses. So if you just have an API, you can consume it with anything. You know, if you wanted to, you could take a WordPress API install, which obviously runs on PHP, and you could hook up a Ruby JSON API parser and build things out that way if you wanted to. I'm pretty sure the most popular way of consuming a CMS API right now is with JavaScript, you know, because JavaScript is super popular and flexible and all that. But in reality, it just gives you a lot of flexibility. So you could do something like make your website a one-page application, and if you wanted to, also release that same build, that same JavaScript build, onto the app stores with something like React Native or Cordova or something else.
Sure. And I mean, I guess it would also be technically possible to build a fully native app if you wanted, because anything that can make an HTTP request and consume JSON would be able to construct a front end out of that data.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think a lot of people are seeing it as a way to open up the content that they provide. So say you have a really popular site, say you're running like a music blog or a music review blog or something like that, and you want other people to build applications that might use your content, you could open up an API like that and then allow them to consume your content. So people can then build any sort of application that they want to.
So when you're looking at this, I assume for Octopus, but when you're looking at this, is it something where you're wanting to go with a pretty well-known CMS that provides an API, or are you thinking more along the lines of one of the open source projects out there that is providing this sort of functionality?
That's a really good question, because I'm not totally sure yet. So I'm looking at both options. Maybe it was a couple of days ago. Maybe it was even yesterday. I'm not totally sure. But I asked in the spec Slack, if anyone knew of any good headless CMSs, and they got a bunch of different links. So this actually came up in a meeting where, you know, the Octopus devs were just talking about stuff, and we were trying to figure out how we can streamline our workflow. Maybe that's the wrong term, but I was thinking about it this morning, and what I noticed is that we tend to build a lot of Statamic sites, and we also tend to build a lot of Rails apps, right? And so when you're building a Statamic site, the designs usually are pretty different, right? You might be building a blog, which has a lot of reusable components that you could probably transfer between projects, but each site tends to have a lot of very specific content. And I noticed that when I'm building these sites out, I don't really have a I don't really have a structure that I stick to, so to speak. For example, APIs, there are different standards you could use, like JSON API. A JSON API standard API is going to look the same no matter what, you know, where it's implemented, right? And when I'm building these server rendered apps or these server rendered websites, I don't have a standard. So I tend to build things from scratch every time because I'm not following a standard. So things aren't necessarily reusable across the board. So one of my initial thoughts is, you know, these headless CMSs are becoming more popular. What if we were able to use one and kind of standardize how we implement that API or how the API would be consumed? I would assume that we would be doing it with view components because that's what we're using right now. We could build a set of view components that we could then share across projects because if the API is a standard, we can consume it the same way each time.
Sure. So clients will still get a nice CMS experience. It'll be something they're probably familiar with, or at least something like tools that they are familiar with. But on the dev side, you also get the benefit of being able to build out a lot of reusable stuff for all the projects that you do going forward. So effectively, the hope would be that every project gets a little bit more streamlined and a little bit faster automatically, just because you have that built-up knowledge and tool set of how things work.
That's exactly the idea. Most of a developer's stress, or at least most of my stress, comes from deadlines approaching and having multiple deadlines approaching. So, you know, we got together and we just started talking about, you know, how can we alleviate some of that stress? If we know what is causing a stress, you know, it's kind of silly to not address that. And that was just the first thing that I thought of, you know, is if we can standardize the way that we're implementing these CMSs, then we could standardize components that we're using across them. But on another note, if we're not making things from scratch for every single site, then the components that we're using, we can put more love into. You know, we can flesh them out more, add more features. We can make sure they're tested really well. We can make sure that things are just really polished without having to start from the ground up every time. And I think that was the biggest selling point for me initially, was thinking about, you know, having a suite of components that we probably even open source, you know, but that we reuse and we just make better and better each time. Our developer, or one of our developers, Nick, maybe it was a couple weeks ago, but it was something that he really stuck with me. And he said, you know, since I started using Vue, I've spent less time implementing base features and I've spent more time implementing features that I probably would not have been able to do previously.
Yeah, that's absolutely been my experience with Vue as well. Like, the simple stuff is done. It's already considered, it's taken care of and implemented very well. And that gives me time to think about, oh, what actually puts the next level of polish on this product that I'm building? What puts that next level of shine that really is going to make it stand out? And that's a really awesome feeling, just to be able to say, I'm not thinking about binding again for the 50th time. Data binding is solved. It's done. It's taken care of. I know how my templates are going to work in every project I do. That's set. I know that language already. It is going to be consistent for me. It's going to save a ton of time. All that stuff is handled. And there's so many other things that Vue gives you just for free out of the box. It's great.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, you could sub Vue out for whatever library, framework, whatever of your choice. We happen to like Vue a lot, obviously. But it is really great to be able just to rely on that. Like you said, I don't have to think about binding. I don't have to think about, you know, making sure the state is reactive. It's just going to work. You know, the Vue library is tested and I don't have to worry about it. I can just benefit from all that work being done already, which has been incredible. So that's my hope. You know, if we can find something, whether it, you know, it probably won't be WordPress API, because I never really had a great experience building on a WordPress site that wasn't just a blog that had to be a bunch of other things. But there are a lot of options out there right now, and I could certainly build my own if I wanted to, but I'm not sure that I have the time to invest into something like that yet. But whatever I end up settling on, I will definitely report back with the results.
Yeah, I think that'll be a super interesting experiment, and especially as you start to use that tool and use it over a period of a few weeks and a few months, I think that'll be very cool to kind of talk about and see how your thoughts and feelings on it change.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be really interesting to hear what our clients have to say too, because, you know, we always have to sell them on what we choose. If we say something like, oh, we're going to use Statimic, they're instantly skeptical and they're like, well, can it do what Drupal does? So it'll be interesting to, you know, see how I'm able to sell this to our clients. Hey, we're going to make you an API. And then maybe they don't even have to know that. You know, maybe they'll just know that they have an admin and they have a front end that works. But it could be another selling point where we could say something like, well, there'll be an API. So that way, if you need to have a mobile app, you know, come back to us and we'll build you a mobile app. There's also another point that I wanted to bring back up, Paul. And earlier when we were talking about the CMS stuff, I mentioned that, you know, I brought it up into a meeting with the rest of the devs at Octopus. And this is something new that we're doing. We're starting to do like a weekly just kind of dev catch up, talk about whatever you want, code review, extravaganza meeting. And I found it to be really, really beneficial to me as a programmer, but also as a person. And the reason is, as a programmer, and this could just be me personally, but I tend to isolate myself a lot. So I always have headphones on. I'm always working. And usually when I'm slacking, I'm dropping links into the Slack or I'm answering questions from the other devs on the team. But I'm never actually really having lots of interpersonal communications with them. And so by getting us all kind of in the same room, I mean, we have remote devs. So we had his face on a TV and we pulled him up to the table like he was sitting there. But it was really good kind of for the soul, if that makes sense.
Well, I think that's even kind of similar to people who work fully remote, why they kind of want to go to coffee shops, why they want to go to co-working spaces, because that is just sort of a nice thing. It's nice to bounce ideas off other developers. It's nice to even just be around other developers and hear that chatter sometimes. Of course, it's a balance because you don't want it to start interfering with your work, all that sort of stuff. But at least occasionally, getting that real life interaction with other devs, I think, is extremely, extremely valuable.
Yeah. I honestly think this week the most beneficial thing for me was hearing the other devs' insecurities. Because like I said, I am pretty solitary. You know, some people might say that I'm hermit-like. I just kind of hole away a lot. But I always, you know, I see people tweeting like, yeah, I just crushed this and this is how you can do this and this is how you can do that. And for a while now, every project that I've been working on has been getting increasingly difficult, which is great. You know, that means I'm not bored. It means that I'm not just kind of complacent in my programming skills. It does kind of wear on you in a different way in that I never feel like I'm totally on top of a project, if that makes sense. I'm always kind of feeling like, yeah, I'm getting this done, but it's kind of by the skin of my teeth that I'm getting it done. And a lot of what happened was me talking with a couple of the other devs that have been feeling the same way. Not to say that we don't feel confident in our skills to program and you know, build apps because we're doing it. It's just that there's a difference in feeling like, yeah, I'm getting this done and yeah, I'm totally crushing this project.
That's always kind of a tough one because, like you said, you don't want to be bored. You want to make sure that you're continuing to grow. But part of continuing to grow is working on stuff that you maybe aren't totally comfortable with yet. And that's a really scary feeling when you're being paid to do it.
Yeah, there's kind of a sweet spot where you end up, right? Where you don't want to be bored and you don't want to feel like you just can't do what you're assigned to, right? And there's a sweet spot in between there. And I feel like we're right there. You know, we're doing stuff that we can do and it's stretching us, but we're not necessarily used to that. You know, in moving from making a lot of marketing sites or, you know, smaller sites to building full-blown apps with legacy data and migrations and all that stuff, there's a gigantic gap in skill that needs to be learned and techniques that need to be learned. And it can be really daunting. And sometimes it's just nice to hear someone else say, you know, I feel like I'm struggling a little bit. And, you know, when I hear other developers say that, I can also say, hey, I'm feeling the same way. How can we, you know, now that we know how we're feeling and what's possibly causing this problem, how can we attack it? You know, how can we deal with this problem? Instead of letting it fester, right? Instead of keeping to yourself. And what that really does is it chips away at your confidence. And I see a lot of parallels in being a musician and being someone in a creative field or being a programmer, right? And you can tell a musician when they're playing if they don't have confidence. You can absolutely tell immediately if someone's doing something that they're not confident in. Because it's definitely really important that you have that, you know, that you don't feel like you're totally sucking at what you're doing. So you can definitely tell instantly when a musician is not confident in what they're playing. And I feel like in some ways, how I feel as a musician when I'm maybe playing something I'm not totally comfortable with, I feel really similar as a programmer.
I think it's important to balance between what is you being pushed and what is maybe just something along the lines of imposter syndrome. So I know this is obviously very, very common with designers and developers to feel like I actually don't know what I'm doing. I'm about to be exposed for the fraud that I am. And I mean, I feel like that personally all the time. I always have, and I probably always will. but you can't let that get to you. It's important to recognize when you're actually learning new stuff or when you're completely floundering, because those are actually two different things, even though they kind of can give you the same feeling.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The difference between are you actually floundering or are you just feeling a little bit insecure about what you're doing?
Right. It's totally natural to go into a new situation, be whether that's moving from front end to back end for the first time or back end to front end for the first time or whatever else that is. Any transition is going to feel a little weird at first because you're learning, because you're growing, because you're pushing yourself. And that's awesome. Those are good things. So don't confuse those with imposter syndrome, which is just you thinking you're not as good as you actually are, because those are actually very different.
That's actually a really good point. Thinking you're not actually good as good as you really are versus feeling insecure about what you're building.
I mean, we've actually talked about this a little bit on the show previously, but every time I've started in a new job, every single time, I've almost immediately been thrust into something, whether that's learning a new programming language or it being my first programming job and just not knowing anything or whatever that is. There's always something every time I start a job where I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing here, but you know what? I just need to buckle in and enjoy that ride and hopefully get better, because that's your only option, right?
Yeah, it's really important to not shy away from that. I know that when I was starting to learn how to play guitar, I would get very discouraged really easily when I tried to pick out a lick that I just couldn't get the first few times. And it wasn't really until I sat down with a friend and they explained to me, you know, that feeling of you're about to screw up as you're playing, like you're playing a song and you're like, I'm going to screw up. He said, that's a really important feeling because that lets you know that you're doing something outside of your comfort zone. That doesn't mean that the lick is just impossible for you to play. That means that you're having to actually try at what you're doing, which is detrimental for progress, for real progress. There's a lot of people that sit down and say, you know, I'm gonna practice guitar for a little bit, and they just kind of noodle around. And it's those people that don't actually make any real progress. Now, over an extended period of time, they'll probably get a little better, you know, just by exposure to the instrument. But the people that sit down and really embrace that awkward feeling, that feeling of I'm about to screw up, those are the people that really progress. In a way, it's almost you looking at what your weak spots are and targeting them.
So in the last episode, we actually recorded in person, and it was also the first time with a guest. We had Mr. John Gold on the show, and we talked a lot about functional CSS or atomic CSS or whatever people want to call it. You know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, we'll have links in the show notes. But Sean, you are working on something right now that is actually using SCSS to generate utility classes in a way. Can you talk about that a little bit? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so that is actually another product of a meeting that I had with a couple of devs. And in the same way that we want to streamline how we're building components for the front end, we're wanting to approach CSS the same way. And, you know, after talking with Mr. Gold and reading countless articles, I've really wanted to give the functional, atomic, what have you, CSS a real try. And when I first started using it, I was using base CSS, which is totally fine, except that I think the only way that you can customize it is a form that he has on the site, and you can change some arbitrary values there. But a lot of the designs that I was trying to use base CSS on had, you know, different sizing, different types, different type sizing, different type scales. It wasn't like the perfect match that I was used to when I was writing, you know, object-oriented CSS. Instead of just giving up altogether, what I decided to do was, well, you know, we use Sass a lot, so why not just embrace that? And what I ended up doing was making, I think, maybe two or three just different files that used Sass to build my classes for me. So the idea was that I would have a settings file where I can set my numbers, you know, spacing ratios and stuff like that. And then the Sass would take those numbers and generate the classes for me dynamically. And so far, it's been pretty okay. You know, I've opened it up to the other devs. Actually, one of our front-end designers / devs, Chris, he did a lot of early work in setting this thing up because we pulled a couple of the files that we had used on previous projects and just put it in a repo. And so he fleshed it out quite a bit. But pretty much all of us, all four of us devs, have been using it for a couple of projects now, and it's been working pretty okay.
I think that's pretty awesome that you're really focusing on that customizability, making sure that you're able to tailor it exactly to each project that you're working on. Because that's always been one of the biggest issues I've had with CSS frameworks in general, and not just atomic CSS frameworks, just CSS frameworks, like Bootstrap, Foundation, anything. It's always been the case that a website made with Bootstrap feels like a Bootstrap website, unless you spend a very, very significant amount of time customizing Bootstrap and going in and editing a lot of stuff by hand. So I think just having a settings file where you input some values and get some CSS out, that seems great. I really like that approach.
Yeah, that was the deal breaker for me. Like you said, we don't use Bootstrap or Foundation for that reason, is because we have to either go in and override tons of things, which is a nightmare, or we have to go through and strip everything down, which takes a good bit of time. So for me, the sweet spot is having a suite of basically functions that spit out these classes for me. It just works really well because we can get that really tailored feel. You know, we can match the design to the PSDs as the designers would expect with relatively little effort. And the fact that, you know, we're all using the same library. I'm not using base CSS and Chris isn't using Tachyons or something like that, right? We're all using the same thing. And so it makes jumping between projects really easy. Right now, we're kind of finishing up 2 web apps, which is a ton of work, you know, for the number of developers that we have. It's been really nice that we're all using Vue and we're all using the same CSS classes on these projects. It just makes jumping back and forth so much easier. So I sit next to Josiah and he might lean over and say, hey, how would you approach building out this component or this piece of design? And I already know what he's using. You know, I already know how the site's being built out. So I can just say, oh, I would just, you know, throw these classes in here and then it's going to be good to go. It's been saving us a lot of time and frustration.
So do you think this is something that you're going to want to open source as it kind of starts to grow and mature a little bit?
It's actually already on GitHub. So we were doing all of our open source stuff on GitLab. I'm not sure why, but that's what I was doing. I was creating a bunch of stuff in GitLab and not sharing it with anybody. So what I did was I moved all of that stuff to GitHub, and it's already on GitHub. So if you are so inclined to look at it and submit any PRs, I would most likely accept those.
Nice. Yeah, just get a link in show notes, and hopefully we can get some good feedback on that. That would be really cool to kind of hear from the community.
Yeah, it would be really awesome. That's one of the things that I wanted to do more this year was contribute to open source. And I know that I say that every single year, and it doesn't necessarily happen because, you know, people get busy. But I'm trying in a different approach this time where I'm releasing stuff into open source and trying to contribute that way. All right, last but not least this week, we have another little cool tool that friend of the show Nicholas Quebman has shown to me. And the name of the tool is Clusterize.js. So if you've ever had to make a JavaScript application with something like Cordova, and you've had to render lots of data in the scrollable view, you know that it can be kind of difficult to manage the performance implications. You have to deal with, you know, should I append rows as you scroll? Should I remove them as they get farther away from the viewport? How should I garbage collect that, basically? And Clusterize is a tiny plugin to manage that for you. In a nutshell, what it does is it handles appending and removing rows of data for you. And it has lots of really cool features, like an auto-height feature. So it'll automatically calculate the number of data rows you have versus how many would actually fit in the viewport. And it handles that automatically for you. You don't even have to think about it. It just works.
So for anybody who's not familiar with what exactly this is or why you would want that, this is very similar to iOS and what it does with a UI table view. So in a UI table view, what actually happens is if you have a list of, I don't know, let's say all your music, which is thousands of items long, the performance to render all those all the time would be really bad. So what iOS does is it actually only has certain cells visible, like basically just the ones that are actually physically visible in the viewport, and then a little bit below and above. And as you scroll, it reuses those cells by moving them around and replacing the content. So that way, it's only rendering, instead of thousands of songs, it's only actually displaying, I don't know, let's say 20 songs at a time. So it's a significantly lower burden. And the same logic applies to websites. This doesn't just have to be Cordova apps or whatever. If you have a list of thousands and thousands of items, that's going to get kind of slow, even on desktop browsers. So having this tool that will automatically dequeue and re-enqueue for you is pretty handy for performance reasons.
So if you find yourself in a situation where you have to worry about this, I recommend just giving Clusterize.js a look. It will probably solve your problems. Or even better, if you're using Vue, someone wrap this into a Vue component, which will make your life much, much easier.
Today's episode of Does Not Compute was brought to you by Linode. Linode is a super fast, easy way to spin up virtual machines backed by speedy SSDs to do just about whatever you want. You can have your own virtual machine running in the Linode cloud in just seconds, and they make it super easy to grow with their additional services like backups, node balancers, and Longview. Plans start at just $10 a month, and their servers are billed hourly, so you only pay for what you actually use. Check out linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the promo code doesnotcompute20 to get $20 in Linode credit. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you like the show, it would be super awesome if you left a rating or review in iTunes. iTunes is pretty much the number one way you can help spread the word about Does Not Compute, and Sean and I appreciate it. It only takes a couple minutes, but it really does make a huge difference.
There was all the can't even talk.